Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, now tuned in to the Kings of the 7 o'clock spot for Home Field Advantage Sports Talk, where our motto is, our home, our field, your advantage. You better take advantage. And the intro is brought to you by the one and only City Boy South. That's CIDDYBOYSOUTH.com.
You was a little flat on that last note.
Well, you know what? I've never been a singer. It is what it is. But, of course, today we're going to talk about the NBA. But before we get started, I just want to throw this in real fast. Our boy Marlon C. is in a movie called Mainstream Floyd. Hey, Marlon, why don't you give some information on that?
Yeah. Mainstream Floyd was it's going to be a web series. It's going to be on YouTube. I think it's going to be on YouTube. But it was very fun to be a part of it. Jada Sky, she wrote it. She stars in it. And I must say, I think it was her first time writing, you know, something like that. But I've had a lot of scripts in my hand. And to read that and really be intrigued by the storyline, it was amazing. Like, it was a great experience and great cast to work with. Everybody got along whenever I was around. I don't know if they were fighting when I wasn't there, but I'm pretty sure they wasn't. But everybody got along. It was very fun, you know, or whatnot, and I enjoyed it. I'm honored to be a part of it. Glad I was selected to be on the cast.
And that trailer was amazing, and I watched it like three times, like literally. It's really interesting. I'm waiting to see it. It's really interesting.
Heavy shit.
You know, it's funny. We thought we was going to jail today. We filmed the outside scene, but I'm glad we didn't, you know. But it was a great experience. I love working with them.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you make sure you look out for that. That's Mainstream Floyd. Now, today, we're going to talk about the NBA. Of course, we had a lot of interesting things that has happened in the NBA. We already know about the top three MVP candidates. But we're going to go in a little bit deep and talk about, you can say, some younger players that's up and coming. And you can say players, you can say changing of the guard. Players that might be worthy of being that successor, especially when LeBron is, you can say, what, finally slow down or whatever that case is. So let's, before we get started, then let me throw out the number. That's 347-215-9490. That's 347-215-9490. That's right. And also, we're going to talk about why y'all, most of y'all hate Atlanta. Atlanta sports, I don't get it, but I'm ready.
Ooh.
I think I already see a superstar online, so we're going to make sure we get him in. But, fellas, let's get started.
I bet you won't give up.
Is anybody worthy? Anybody? Just anybody?
Is anybody worthy of LeBron's mantle when he steps down as the best player in the league?
Yes, sir.
No, in my personal opinion. I think you have some people that could possibly take that mantle. Somebody like Anthony Davis. But I think a lot has to happen for him to take that mantle. I think that he needs a coach that's really going to put him in the position to be the best player on the planet. no disrespect to Monty Williams, because I love to see my brothers and sisters succeed as coaches, but that team is too stacked for him to be an 8 seed. I don't care if it's Eastern Conference or Western Conference. And Anthony Davis was a point guard in high school, went on an enormous growth spurt. Why are we not running more set plays through him as a facilitator?
Because Tyreek Evans on the team.
But they don't. But they're not on the court all the time together.
They are now.
Well, due to some injuries. But
yes.
if you're the coach, why are you not saying, hey, Tyreek, you need the ball out your hand. Let Anthony Davis set this thing up.
Yeah, that would assume that Tyreek listens to a coach.
I'm not sure we know that. But he's not that guy to where you can say, I'm gonna ignore the coach. And if the coach wants to, retaliate against him or something, like, you can do that. It's Tyreek Evans. Like, his ship passed 3 years ago.
Well, they're fighting for an 8 seed, so I don't think they can bench him.
No.
Evans or nothing. Like, it's tough. And I do think that Tyreek Evans actually hinders what Anthony Davis does because he needs the ball in his hand so much. But regardless of the fact, Anthony Davis still is putting up a monstrosity of a season.
Yeah, it's a great season, but you know how I am. I'm a guy that believes in empty stats. And I'm not saying his stats are empty, but they're not full either. I can see where you can get more out of him to make his every step he takes on the court can be impactful. It just depends on the coach putting him in the right position.
I just think they're in a tough West, but I mean,
ooh.
Let me ask you a question, because I agree that I don't think anybody can take LeBron James' throne or be worthy to hold his headband.
His son.
Yeah, you come out to his son you want to. He and I already tweeted about y'all. But why do you think that Anthony Davis cannot take that next step? And I'm a person, I think the talent is there, but do I think that he's going to be that guy that can just, like, take a team and just dominate? Because he should really take this team and dominate.
I think the reason why he's not taking that next step is because of, I think the organization really don't know how to deal with a superstar, first of all. And I think that Monty Williams is a coach who is learning. Like, I think that he's going to be more successful at his next stop, because within the next year or two, he will be fired. I mean, unless something drastic happens. But I think those are the two main reasons why Anthony Davis will not be the best player on the planet while he's in New Orleans. Let's make that clear.
Oh, I see the subtle jab. No.
No,
that's shade.
No, it's not shade, because someone of his magnitude can take any organization and make the organization a top-notch organization. I mean, let's get something straight. Chicago wasn't always a top-notch organization.
Right.
Michael Jordan came there and they built around him.
Right.
And he took that from a small to medium market to a large market. So it can happen in any city. It just depends on the organization being strategic and building around that player, and not just on the court, build off the court. Let's draft around this player and his strong suits and cover up his weak points, because every superstar has them. I mean, that's why LeBron was not a great shooter. They knew how to get people around him on the perimeter who could shoot, because he was a great distributor. So, you know, I just think that the organization needs to work on that.
I think you said it best when you said coach. I think every successor had that coach, or at least had that coach that could put him in that position. I mean, you can't do it by yourself.
But did LeBron really have that coach in the beginning? Who had Silas?
Paul
Silas.
But no, he didn't. But like Marlon said, they had to put people around. Like, one of them coaches, he got to Miami, he had Pat Riley.
Right, right.
So that situation wasn't the coach, but it was the organization, like Marlon was mentioning earlier. As far as New Orleans go, it's just a team that I'm not understanding that either. I'm looking at the pieces on that team, and I'm not fully understanding that myself.
Yeah.
So I agree with everybody saying, no, it's not one. And I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just too hard on people.
Now,
but
I got a lot of players that can come close.
Mm-hmm.
But I think their ceiling is Kevin Durant level. And I just don't see anybody that can get to that LeBron level where they can almost will a horrible team to the playoffs. And not only that, that they can polarize the game. Closest person is probably to his talent level is Wiggins. But Wiggins doesn't have the all-around game that LeBron did when he came in. So I don't know. I mean, I hate to say LeBron is a once-in-a-lifetime player, which he's not. Okay, I'm lying. Yes, he is.
He is. Yeah.
I tried to hate, but yeah, he is. But, I mean, it's tough to, you know, treat other players like they're not doing that well. But I don't think – like, the close person for me is Russell Westbrook. And to me, he's past the age.
He's 26.
He's past the age of, like, what we see is what we get. I'm not sure how much more he's going to grow.
Right. Well, I think we've seen an evolution with him this season. I think we see what he can do. He can do more than what we thought.
But I said he can do more than what he thought. I mean, than what we thought. I said that before. When it came to Russell Westbrook, I felt like Marlon, you always mentioned about that dog in him. And I always said I felt like Westbrook had a little bit more dog in him than Durant.
Oh, he got that dog in him.
But I said that, matter of fact, I said a couple of shows ago about Westbrook. I know he can do more than what he can do, and he proved that to me when they went to the championship before, when they went against the Spurs.
Yes.
And he got mad because Tony Parker was dogging him out. Coach was like, "Nah, you're going to have to check Jim Mobley not working." He got mad and started locking down him. Then they put him back on Tony Parker. So I know the boy can do way more than what he can do. Right now, he just took advantage of that window. You have people that don't take advantage of that window, and he is taking it to a whole nother level right now. He's just doing what I always thought he could do.
Is he doing this because he's grown as a player, or is he doing this because KD, I like to cry for my mama, ain't there?
I felt like he always could do it. That's just me.
I think that he's grown due to the situation.
Okay.
It's just like, give you a great example. Kobe, you know, everyone likes to talk about, you know, I've had this debate about Kobe's dominance in the NBA. But there was a couple seasons where Kobe was just not that guy to me.
Say it again.
But he was a stat beast. He was dunking on people. You know, he was taking trips to Colorado. He was doing everything. But but during that time frame, he was just another guy. He was just another great, great ball player that was putting up numbers but wasn't doing anything. It took the right circumstance, right personnel to be around him to elevate him back to where I thought he should have been. And he won two championships.
So it's possible. See, I don't think most players, I think, Marlon, you said this before, I don't think a lot of players have the ability to get to around the age of 26, 27 and say, I can take my game to another level.
I agree.
So
there are some who can.
That makes me worried because I feel like, okay, at one point, Kobe rivaled LeBron. Granted, LeBron was younger and less experienced.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, Kobe really was the most dominant player, possibly, well, or the most polarizing player on the planet.
I would say he was the most polarizing.
Okay, so I just don't see that in anybody else. Like, Russell Westbrook, to me, can become this day's Allen Iverson to me. Like, he brings that type of emotion out of you. However, along with being Allen Iverson, you get the bad stuff, too. Mm-hmm. And the NBA didn't quite like Allen Iverson.
That's true. But I think that the NBA has they have a corral on Russell Westbrook. So I don't think he's going to get out of hand. You know, when you brought up Wiggins, I actually have him in my, like, dark horse area. Because I think I need to see more. I see the potential. But I got to see more. I haven't really seen him dominate a game to where I'm like, he's the best player on the floor. I just see him as the guy who has the most talent on the floor. And that's the difference between talent and actuality.
okay. I mean, I think that's a little rough seeing how he's a rookie and wasn't even playing like 23 minutes a game at one point.
I totally agree. But you know what? There, when you got a seasoned coach like Flip Saunders who knows how to handle young guys like that, there's a reason he's probably playing 23 minutes a game.
Okay. I mean, yeah, and I think we have to judge young players at a different angle anyway. We can't look at LeBron, who he is today, and say, well, you're not playing like him. You know, we have to look at people and see their ceilings and see where they have opportunities to grow.
Correct.
And that's my point with Russell Westbrook. Like, if Russell Westbrook was in his second year in the league, I'll quickly tell you, oh, he makes a pass.
Oh, he's the best player in the world.
But, you know, he's 26 now.
Correct.
Seven, isn't he?
No, he turned 27 this year, later on this
year. Okay.
So he's 26 right now.
So that's why I like to look at the young players, the ones that's been in the league less than 5 years, one is like 25 and under, to be like, okay, who got the opportunity to show us something else?
Yes.
That's what I appreciate about Anthony Davis. I was begging, please give him a center, so let this man do what we think he can do. And he's showing it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that he's got the power to get to LeBron status.
I don't think he's the guy. As a matter of fact, the next great player in the NBA, I don't think they're in the NBA yet.
That's fair.
But if there's anybody that's in the NBA that could take that mantle and run with it, it is Anthony Davis. But there's so many factors that have to change or become more prevalent to him for that to happen.
Let me ask you a question. Do we not mention Paul George because of the injury?
I was getting ready to say
that. I have a person that I think can get very close to LeBron. Nobody will like it. But why don't we mention Paul George?
I think he should. Well, I don't know. I think people are kind of sitting back and see what this injury is going to do because they kind of just put it on him like he's the next with Paul George. I mean, he's only 24. And, you know, we've seen a lot of what he can do. A lot of people are, you know, were kind of like, this might be the next guy. But now since he had this injury, I think a lot of people are trying to see where his angle at. And I think that's kind of – it's kind of unfair in a sense. But I guess when you see something like Derrick Rose and his situation and people are starting to, you can say, count injuries in a sense or factoring injuries. Let me say it that way.
Yeah, I actually think he could come back from this injury.
I think so, too.
I don't see it as one of those, you know, it ain't Sean Livingston. I think he's going to be okay. What concerns me is that I think he got the big head a little too fast after that playoff series against LeBron. And I wonder if he's still aiming to grow. Because he got drafted, what, 2010 or 2011? I think it's 2010.
When I look at Paul George, you guys know that he still is one of my favorite players, and I have two reasons why I'm not ready to bestow that honor upon him.
Ooh, you use bestow.
That's right. I got a fourth grade education, y'all.
Let's go.
All right, Floyd.
But seriously, the reason why I wouldn't put him that far is because, number one, the injury. I've never seen anyone come back from that type of injury and play at a high level. That's number one. Number two, that playoff series against Miami, where I felt like he fizzled out, he was battling for the best player on the planet in that series, and he lost. Rightfully so. He went against the best man on the planet. But the next season, he started out, like, amazing.
Yeah.
Then he hit a wall that was like the wall on Walking Dead. He hit that wall hard because he was not playing good for a while. And Lance Stephenson carried that team, who's another kid. If he can get his mental correct, if he can get his mental correct, he can be on one of those kids. But then Paul George started getting it back towards the end of the season. And that's why I can't put him on this list. Now, that particular season and the way it went, it reminds me of another kid who I would like to put on that list, Nikola Mirotic. Amazing player. Now, the difference between Paul George and Nikola Mirotic is Nikola is a rookie. Well, by NBA standards.
By NBA standards, yeah.
But he had to learn to lead.
Right.
He started out amazing. He hit his wall. Now he's back on fire. Plus, he had to earn his playing time against, I mean, from veteran guys such as Carlos Boos. I'm sorry, they're looking like Taj Gibson. All you black people looking like Taj Gibson.
Tony Snell. Jimmy Butler.
Tell Jimmy he can't hide. But,
Gasol was loaded up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you right.
So, but I think he's going to be the next Dirk. And that doesn't equate to LeBron.
Yeah, I like Nikola Mirotic.
I do too.
You know, but like I said, his ceiling, you know, I don't know where it is. The highest ceiling of some people that I see is, you know, I don't like me for saying this, but you have to hear me out that these guys are people that's been in the league under 5 years and can possibly grow to a all-star level. And those two people to me are Kawhi Leonard.
I like that name.
And Giannis Antetokounmpo. Almost got it.
Did you fart?
Antetokounmpo. Got it even better. Swag.
I mean, Kawhi Leonard was actually on my list. I just think the only problem with that is he's in Greg Popovich's system and how he operates. So the question is, I guess what everybody's waiting on is pretty much when Duncan, Parker, Mobley, when it's no longer them, because it looks like Kawhi Leonard is going to be, you can say, somewhat the centerpiece, or it looks like somewhat of the centerpiece, what's going to happen? Or what they're going to put around them. Let me put it that way, because that's how Greg operates.
Well, Greg has, I mean, they have a nice young crop of young people on San Antonio's team, and we just look at the old heads. But let me say this about Kawhi Leonard, and it's not any disrespect to him, because I am a fan of him.
I smell hate coming.
A little bit, if you want to say that. I think there's a reason why Popovich, because I don't question him, because I think he's the best coach in the NBA active. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why he hasn't turned the keys over to the team to Kawhi Leonard. Because if you look at Tim Duncan is going to give you what he gives you,
right?
You know, at this stage in his career. Manu, still has his nights. But this team should be predicated or built off of Tony Parker and Kawhi Leonard. We still running Duncan and Parker, basically. So, to me, I just think it's a reason why Pop hasn't turned his team over. I don't know if he's coddling this guy or just bringing him along slowly, or he sees the deficiencies in his game and he's trying to work with him until that time comes. I think something to think about.
I think he's bringing him along slow. I mean, Tim Duncan is still Tim Duncan. That's how I'm looking at it. Tim Duncan is still Tim Duncan.
Right.
He can still bruise you in certain areas. They call him Mr. Fundamentals, and he's still Mr. Fundamentals. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, and that's what I looked at, too, because I likened it to Kobe when Kobe was with Shaq and all those other players. You know, he wasn't the first guy. And actually, when Shaq first got there, Kobe wasn't the second guy.
He wasn't even the third guy.
No, yeah. So I look at it like Kawhi is just, it ain't his team yet.
But the difference. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But what I saw from him in that playoff series, there was a lot of one-on-one against LeBron, and he just won.
Yeah.
And so that's what made me. Now, before, I would have definitely been the type that said, you know what? He's just a system guy. But during that playoffs, I just saw him just go at LeBron, and I was just like, you know what? He got it. He's got it. Even though I didn't think so, because he had that ugly suit on draft night, and I just knew he was going to be a loser, but he's doing great.
And he almost went to Indiana.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not hating on him, because I actually have him on my list. I called him my top guys that was under 25, and I rated him number 8 on my list.
Yeah.
I definitely see the potential there when it comes to Kawhi Leonard. Pop is someone, I mean, Pop had Tim Duncan at the age of, 24? And he let the reins loose on Tim Duncan. He told David Robinson, he didn't tell him, but David Robinson took a back seat to let this man open up and run the team, I mean, be the star of the team. So Pop is someone who knows talent, and he knows when to say, this is the man and you're not the man. And this, I just think there's a reason. And I haven't figured it out yet because Pop is, like I said, the best coach in the NBA.
Right.
And I think he's just covering. He's helping him along.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I really think the deficiency that I can, if there's anything I can point out about his game, it's offensively. I don't know what his strengths are offensively. Because a lot of times what I see out of him, I think he just scores because they passing the ball. I don't think they run plays for him.
I can't disagree with that.
Well, he has a world of talent.
I just see it just on the world's biggest stage. That man went 1-on-1 and
with the best player on the planet.
I was shocked. I was like, "What?" I'm not even a LeBron fan, and I was like, "What is going on with LeBron?" And it had nothing to do with LeBron. It was.
Now I don't want to throw any shade or hate, but I do want to say LeBron was taking on a Spurs team by himself, so yeah. I think a lot of time he was fatigued.
Shady McCoy.
And I think that I just think that Kawhi got the best of him because he was tired. But I'm not saying that Kawhi cannot outdo him defensively at his best either. I think he can definitely frustrate LeBron.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the man was tired.
I think one thing that Popovich is good at is he knows how to not run down his player. And I think that's part of him stringing Kawhi Leonard along. He knows if it's a certain player that he liked, because he literally chased this boy. I believe he got drafted by Indiana wanted to draft him at first. Pop did a lot just to get Kawhi Leonard. So
I think they did trade up to get him.
Oh, get him. Because I think Indiana was gunning for him, and they did what they had to do to get this boy.
That would have been interesting.
I think
see all of them together, Paul George, Stevenson,
right.
Kawhi Leonard.
So I think, I don't think they did. I think Paul George already left before Kawhi Leonard got there, something like that, because he went to the same school. But I just think, yeah, he's stringing him along right now, because I feel like Tim Duncan, he can still get you something if you ask for it,
mm-hmm.
or he know it needs to be done. So it kind of makes sense to me. And, you know, you got Tony being Tony, and I think that's how it rolls.
Yeah, team first. I don't know. I just when I watch him, I see something in him.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree.
I feel like once Duncan retires, I feel like we're gonna see a whole nother level of Kawhi just play. That's the same thing way I feel about Giannis. Like when I watch Giannis Antetokounmpo, I wonder.
Did you fart?
That's a bad man right there.
And everybody and trust me, I see the man raw is all get out. But what I see from him, I'm just like, this man is gonna be a problem.
Yeah, I mean he's not even through groin yet.
I mean 6'11", he moves. I'm gonna go ahead and say it. I know you ain't gonna like me for it. He moves better than Kevin Durant.
Maybe.
And will go in the post. And play in the post.
I think he's being coached up pretty good too.
Yeah, excellent.
I think Jason Kidd has acknowledged that this kid got a bunch of talent and he's going to work with him.
Sucks for you, Brooklyn.
Yeah. and I know that's not the subject for tonight, but somebody please tell me. And when we go to the phone line, somebody tell me how did Billy King, the Brooklyn Nets GM, keep his job? Out of everybody who left and who wants to sell the team, how does this man keep his job?
I think he has Amber Rose level pictures of one of the owners.
I think he caught Mikhail Prokhorov trying to screw a goat, because there's no way in the world this man should still have a job.
You trying to poke a goat?
It's something. I don't get it.
Yeah, it don't make sense. It don't make sense.
How in the world you bring in a coach that says, you know, I want to be fast tempo on offense, you know, run X, Y, and Z on offense and focus on defense. But then you go get a bunch of isolation old guys.
I think that was desperate. I think he was being desperate. Because that owner kept saying, I need a championship now. Now, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't have did it.
Now,
I
don't
like old folks on my team.
But I commend Jason Kidd. I think that was some of the best coaching I saw last year, because it had to been where he said, look, you guys can't play to the way I want you to play, and you guys don't like what I'm trying to give you. Let's meet in the middle, and let's just make a playoff run.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Right.
I like the fact that he was going to find a way to win. even if it took him to spill some water on the court, he was going to find a way. But I got to give him his props because I didn't think he was going to be able to do anything with that team. And, boy, I was wrong. And it's on record. But let's go ahead and go to the phone line. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to say the last four digits of your phone number. And it's your opportunity to talk. So we're going to start off with the last four. 3824. That's 3824. You're now on up for discussion.
What's up, gentlemen? How y'all doing?
Hello there.
Hey. Hello. Hey, can you hear it? It's Mike, man. Y'all doing
all
right?
Yeah, we know we're going
hey,
on,
but,
man.
Mike, what, be there.
Hey, not too much, but one of the players, I think, if he wouldn't have got hurt, I'm interested to see what happens with Jabari Parker, man. I think Jabari Parker got the deal, and he got a chance to do everything, especially with the coaching under Jason Kidd.
Jabari. I would like to see. To be honest, I wanted to see him go back to Duke, but I knew why he came out. You arguably going to be the first overall pick. You come out. But I would like to see where he grows with Jason Kidd because he's got the right head coach.
Yeah, he definitely got the right head coach on that. And then enough with the Kobe slander, man. Kobe wasn't the fifth and sixth option on that team, even when he was a rookie. That's preposterous. Whoever said that?
No, he was. If you think about that rookie year, it was he didn't even start. He was the bench. He came off the bench. It was Shaq, Eldon Campbell, Rick Fox. Eddie, yeah. Dang, I'll get rid of that Eddie Long. I mean, Eddie Jones, Nick Van Exel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because if you think about it,
I'm not sure Rick Fox is there yet.
Yeah, he was there.
Rick Fox
came
to year.
No.
He
came the year
after. Yeah, he came the year after. So, I don't know, man. But it worked out, I guess, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kobe was coming off the bench. It was Nick Van Exel, Eddie Jones, Robert Horry, Eldon Campbell, Shaquille O'Neal. And then Derek Fisher was the sixth man, and then Byron Scott came out behind him.
I think Robert Horry came in 97 after he left Phoenix when he had the run in with Scott Skiles.
Yeah, that's right. Tell me when they threw the towel.
Oh, that was so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but y'all keep it up, man. I'm definitely tuned in. Y'all keep it going, man.
Yes, sir.
All right, now.
All right, now.
Hold on. Before we take another call, I got to say this. You guys know I love Jabari Parker because he reminds me of Carmelo.
He does.
I got to say, he's on my fizzed out list.
What?
When I watched him play before he got injured, I mean, he can move off the list. I'm not saying he's, like, stuck there. You know what I mean?
You stay there.
But the reason why I put him on that list is because when I watched him play, I saw a guy who he never looked like the best player on the court. He never looked like the best talent on the court. He just looked like a pretty good role guy. And believe me, if there was anybody rooting for him, it's me because I like the kid a lot because he reminds me of Melo when he was in college. But the Greek Freak looked 10 times better than him. Even John Henson looked more productive than he did. I hate to say it, but that's just for this season. Then he wound up getting injured. So he can come back, rehab, like he said in his Gatorade commercial, and be the man again. And I'm rooting for him because I want to see him succeed.
Yeah, I think for me it's just – I can't say it right now just because of what you said. It's his first season.
Yeah.
I think Milwaukee going to be nasty next year, though. But,
It's just too early for me.
Yeah, for me, it's too early.
It may be too early, but my list was strictly made off the eyeball test. There was no statistics, no anything. But as a matter of fact, one of the dark horses on my list is Michael Carter-Williams. Mm-hmm. I think he can do everything on the court except for shoot. And
yes.
I think that he has the right head. We sound like we live in Milwaukee and that we follow Jason Kidd.
Right?
But he has the right head coach to help mold him into a top 10 NBA point guard.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I'm you know, I'm on the side of Jabari Parker has a lot of potential. I think he's going to become one of those top five players in the league as long as he doesn't let this injury set him back mentally.
And Vest, I heard, if you ever hit his, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to down your Duke player. I apologize.
Go Duke.
Dookie. Toilet.
Hey. Let's not do this.
Okay, let's go to another caller. I'm going to call the last four. That's caller 3373. That's 3373. You're now up for discussion.
Whoa. What up, fellas?
What up,
Cam?
Bro?
Whoa, Cam.
Yeah, I felt crazy, man.
Man, but look, man, I just wanted to touch base. So, I'm looking at I just wanted to agree with y'all. I mean, really, to be honest with you, right now, looking at it, if LeBron retired right now, I'm trying to put this the best perspective I can. If LeBron retired right now, it's really nobody else that's just going to take over that reign, especially that's younger enough as far as in that aspect of just being that next dominant superstar. I think that was Rashad that said Marlon, both of y'all sound about alike on here, but it seemed like nobody at that range of 25 under really is dominant right now. Either that or I don't think they're in the NBA right now. I'm pretty much the same agreement with that. But if you had to do it by default, I would say it would probably be Steph Curry. Steph Curry is probably the only one as far as being a next face of the NBA. You probably have to go that way or him or I would say James Harden, but I'm really not ready to say him right now. I say that because I think we're about to go, when LeBron retires, unless that next superstar comes in the next few drafts or steps up, I think we're going to go into that same time period right after Michael Jordan retired back in 98. If you remember, during that time frame, it was that small 5-6 year window. It really wasn't nobody that was the man, the face of the NBA. Kobe was coming to his own because he had been to multiple championships. I think had he not been to multiple championships, he probably wouldn't be getting, you know, at that time, because that's what set him up for today. But because he went to so many championships during that span of time, and his talent was really shown during that period, that's what made him so great today. But during that time period, there was really no dominant superstar that was going to take after Michael. You had a bunch of good teams. It was several good teams, You had the Lakers. I mean, you had the Spurs. You had the Knicks were actually good back then. I mean, you know, you had the Timberwolves, Kevin Garnett. You had a bunch of good teams. And I think that's how it's going to be now. I think it's going to be a bunch of good teams because you got several good teams right now. But LeBron is the face of the NBA, and I don't think nobody else is really about to step up right now unless they haven't. I mean, Anthony Davis, I would say him, but I think that was Shaw that said that. I agree. He's going to have to go somewhere else. He can't be that dominant franchise with the Pelicans. I mean, come on, the name Pelicans, really? No, he's going to have to go somewhere else. And I think if he does that, the big – huh?
I said, I don't even call them the Pelicans. They're just New Orleans.
Right. They're just called bird droppings. But, I mean, you know, the thing is, like, his exposure, if he goes to another big – and I'm not going to say that totally because LeBron still was a superstar even in Cleveland, but I think the fact that still another market would help push his brand a little bit more. And but that's what I think. And I mean, that boy Okafor, and you know, I told y'all before several months ago, I told you the big man is coming back to the NBA. I'm telling you, Okafor, unless he turns into the Candy Man, we're about to have some big time big men in this league right now. You got DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis. If Joel Embiid can come back, if he can actually be really good as they say he is, that's one. Then you got, if Okafor turns out to be the superstar he's supposed to be, he's going to be a baller. Then you got still got some, you know, like Kevin Love, Aldridge. The center position is about to come back, man, I'm telling you. The guards are good, but the center position is about to come back in full beast mode. But that's all I got to say.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
All right, brother.
Appreciate that, Cam. I got something to say real quick. He is right. I started looking at the young guys that were big men.
Ooh. Yeah.
It's a bunch of them. Yeah. And they are talented. Like, even Joel Embiid, I know as much as jokes as we make, let's be honest, we saw him last year, and boy, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Jahlil Okafor, when he comes out, he's about as polished as a big man that I've seen.
Offensively?
Yeah.
Make sure you say that.
Offensively. Offensively. And then, surprise, surprise name throwing Rudy Gobert.
Woo, boy, what you talking about?
Man.
That's a bad man.
Man, who is Serge Ibaka? Bump that. Rudy Gobert is good.
Now, with all due respect, Serge Ibaka, the basketball player, I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
Serge Ibaka, the man. That boy, he just like Tupac. He got a great catalog.
Yeah.
It's
But
Harry Hilson. Oh
boy. Trina, somebody else. He's had quite a few.
Yeah, he done.
What does he say?
He been rumbling.
Hello, my name is Such.
I'm from Congo.
Yes, yes. The meat. I don't know, but
get that tuna steak, girl.
I actually put in my notes because I know that was one of our pre-meeting questions, you know, about the positions. I put point guard down as the position,
right?
That's getting it right now because every team in the NBA has a good to solid starting point guard and has at least a solid backup.
Yeah.
But I put on here that big men are on the upswing.
Yeah, man. And I'm going to tell you, the next guy, especially if he does what I think he's going to do, which is end up signing with Atlanta, Greg Monroe, he's ready. I'm ready for him to get out of Detroit because that man, I know for a fact Greg Monroe can do 20-13-5.
He is one of my dark horses.
Yeah. 20-13-5 is not out of the question for Greg Monroe.
No.
Right now in Detroit, he's doing 18.8 points, 10.5 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1.8 steals, 0.9 blocks, and that's since the All-Star break.
Hmm. But what I would like to know, what in the world is going on with Andre Drummond? He has all the physical tools.
He's hit a wall. He's definitely hit a wall. Well, I take that back. I think he gets a lot of hype because he puts up those key big man stats, which is rebound blocks, points, mm-hmm. and field goal percentage. So you see that and you automatically judge a big man as relevant. But let's be honest, he gets dogged out on the court defensively a lot of times. It just does. I mean, if you ever watch Detroit go against Atlanta, Al Horford dogs him out. He just takes him like two steps outside of the little paint, and that's it.
Hmm. Let me say something really quick. So, Miss Tarika Foster, she's part of the Sports Fam. Love those guys.
Hey, Tarika.
Hey, how y'all doing?
They look out for us. But she was saying Detroit does not need to lose Monroe, and that she said, hashtag, that's my squad.
They don't need to. I agree.
They don't.
They don't need to, but I think Atlanta makes a very tempting spot.
I think he wants out.
I think he wants out too.
From all the reports that you read about Greg Monroe,
he's
frustrated with the organization because it's been in flux for the past 3 years, which has basically been what his whole career, three or four years. Because they've been internally battling with Joe Dumars. They didn't want Joe there for a while, but they like half was saying he won us a championship, the other half was saying he's horrible, he's drafting bad and doing this.
Right.
So it's been a battle, but all the reports coming out is saying that this guy is not team is just in bad situation. So
I was just cracking up when you said that somebody said that he was drafted bad. That's an understatement. Well, it's not the drafting bad.
I think he's
signing
hit.
Bad.
Yeah, I was going to say signing bad.
When
I'll take that.
Charlie Villanueva.
Who?
And Vanilla Wafer.
Who?
And was it Ben Gordon? Ooh, Jesus.
I understood why he signed Ben Gordon. I understood all his signings.
What?
What I didn't understand was, I think Joe was signing these guys and drafting these guys from a talent perspective. And I don't think he looked at it from a structure perspective with his coach and how everything worked.
He showed them.
That's what I think, Joe. But if you were to take, if you were to say, I thought he drafted and signed good. He screwed up with Darko. I don't care what the situation is. You draft Carmelo.
That
Anthony.
Should have been Carmelo, hands down.
That's number one. Number two, I think Josh.
Go ahead and say it.
Josh was not a good signing for that team.
What?
When you look at his 3-point field goal percentage and knowing that you was putting him on the wing, that was not a good signing.
Bad bye.
But outside of that, I really think that the guys that he drafted, I thought that that he drafted and that he signed to free agency, it was great talent that he thought would work together, but it did not work with the coach.
I give you that. I can actually give you that. I just know that Josh thing was horrible.
And also, I want to say one more thing about him. I did not like how he handled Rick Carlisle. So Rick Carlisle was a great coach. So that he had bumps in the road, but I thought Joe was a good GM. If I had to give him between an A through an F, I'd give him a B.
C plus. Let's get him out of school. That's one of them. I mean, but my thing with Greg Monroe is I think it's too enticing of job offers for him to stay. If he does stay, he is doing it purely because he feels that he wants to stay with Andre Drummond or something. I mean,
uh-oh.
I just don't see it. I just don't see it.
Oh my God, this is so funny. She says this is Tarika again. She says, what do you mean, what else does he need to do as a center? I guess that's about Drummond. Says she disagrees. She said, bro, Al Horford is not dogging Drummond.
Oh,
he takes him out. He does take him out of the paint and take him out of his comfort zone.
he's doing enough to get by.
Okay.
And this kind of goes to what I was saying. She says, we haven't had consistent coaching or front office. I think Rick Carlisle was a great coach in Detroit. I just think him and Joe didn't get along. Larry Brown was great. After that, I don't know. Then she says, we're on track until the Jennings injury. I agree. Allen Iverson was a disaster there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and DNA Sports Talk.
Anyway, she said she's going to call in because she's tired of this.
We ain't scared. Call in.
DNA Sports Talk, they also tweeted us. Follow them at DNA Sports. They said that Joe Dumars messed up the coaches and not the players. And that the Pistons will make strides next season. Their front office is like the Hawks. I won't fully disagree with that. But like I said, even with the Brandon Jennings part, I like Brandon Jennings. But a lot of the praise was put on him when Josh left. I saw the fact that you started giving Greg Monroe up to 7 to 8 more minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, give or take. I just think that Greg Monroe is that next guy. He's an amazing, amazing power forward that is offensively gifted. And with Atlanta possibly having a shot at losing Millsap, I think Atlanta's going full press at Greg Monroe. And I don't think we're going to be the only team. It's my only point. But I think he's up for a breakout season, like a true tear-up season.
Okay. I see we got another caller online. We're going to go ahead and go to this caller. We're going to say the last 4 digits of your phone number. Okay, let's go. 3662. That's 3662. You are now enough for discussion.
Nah, there was no way I could sit there and let y'all talk about my Pistons like that. I'm in the office.
Oh, I'm glad you
called
me.
How you guys doing?
Let's do this.
Couple things, because I ain't going to get put out the office for going crazy, but I just wanted to say, one, how in the world can you defend the moves that Joe Dumars made in 2009 and 2010 to just completely destroy our team like that? First off, he brought in too many players that were, one, either past their prime, injury prone, or three, selfish players. Case in point, Charlie Villanueva, past prime, Ben Gordon, injury-prone, Allen Iverson, a selfish player. Now, it's not his fault that he was a selfish player because you came from the 76ers. That's what y'all had to do. You were the man.
Right.
But you built You built a team in Detroit in which it was not a player per player, but it was literally a collaborative effort. That's how we won in 2004. That's the reason why Rick Carlisle was able to bring us to being a 50-plus win team again. That's how we were.
Mm-hmm.
So when you broke up that core, that's what you did. You didn't break up the core with other players that were at least on equal talent or as far as bringing the same concepts, bringing the same kind of things to the team. You bought something completely different. And then, two, this is where a lot of things get twisted, too, because Joe Dumars actually had a lot of front office issues with the new owner in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Bill Davison died. After Bill Davison died, Tom Gores actually took over the team. And the things that he wanted and the things that Joe Dumars wanted, completely different. Because of that, a lot of the moves and decisions that were made looked to be because of, for example, the Maurice Cheeks firing. Maurice Cheeks firing was not Joe Dumars. It was a Tom Gores thing. You know what I mean? So a lot
mm-hmm.
of one of the reasons why Detroit hasn't been able to get back and pick themselves up by their bootstraps to get back where they need to be is because, hey, we haven't had consistent coaching. We haven't had consistent front office. Look at Brandon Knight. Brandon Knight is balling in Milwaukee.
Yes.
Because he has at least a coach who – he has a front office. He has a coaching staff that's consistent, that's willing to work with them. He had none of that for 3 years in Detroit. I can name – look at Aaron Aflalo. Aaron Aflalo played for Detroit. What?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have Aaron Aflalo back again. So front office killed the Pistons after 2010. And as far as Al Horford, you tripping. Drummond ain't getting dogged out by Al Horford. Stop it.
He got dogged.
He did enough.
He did enough.
I think that with Al Horford, I think with Drummond, any center or big man that can shoot 15 feet takes Drummond out of his comfort zone as far as defending. And that's the only knock I have on him on defense. I think the guy is super talented. I just don't know why he hasn't sprung himself to the top as far as big men are concerned.
Cause
dude is a baller.
He definitely is
okay.
a baller, and he definitely balled out at UConn. So I can give you that. I'm just being biased because I'm being a fan. That's all. But realistically, though.
Nothing wrong with that. But technically, everything you were saying, I agree with. And that's basically kind of what I was saying. I know it was turmoil up there with Joe and ownership and other people. I like the signings that he made. I just thought, I didn't like the AI. I thought that one was bad. But
so
I like the signings. I thought
bad.
That the coaching situation wasn't right, and I know that it was too much going on for it to work.
So you still like the Josh Smith signing?
No. I didn't like Darko. I didn't like Josh. I didn't like AI. But, like, Villanueva, if you got a strong coach, why can't that coach – look? Okay, Steve Kerr in Golden State.
Okay.
He came in there. All that ego stuff went away because he said, David Lee, you coming off the bench. This person, you're doing this. Iguodala, you sit down. Andrew Bogut, he's going to be a piece of this offense. What y'all going to say now?
Right.
That's being a real head coach. I don't think that the coaches in Detroit have been privy to that type of power to do that. Since,
I think right now Detroit is going to be headed in the right direction simply because Stan Van Gundy is a different type of coach than anybody that we've had.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Maybe Larry Brown.
We agree.
So,
I agree with that.
Totally.
Yeah.
So
that was a good decision.
I want to see him get the best out of Drummond.
I think he will.
Yeah.
I think he will too.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of the Reggie Jackson trade. I'm gonna close it at this because I know you guys got other callers and other topics. But I wasn't a big fan of the Reggie Jackson trade. However, I do think that the best thing about the Josh Smith about him leaving was that the biggest need that we had when we got Shooter and the biggest problem that Josh Smith had in Atlanta is that he thought he was an outside shooter. Bro, you can't
yeah.
do it. Stop it. And so being the fact that when he left, that left Jody Meeks more available, that left at the time Kyle Singler more available, who was a crazy shooter. He was a 50-something percent behind the arc shooter when he was at Duke. So, you know, giving him the availability to be out, and it helped our offense because realistically, defensively, we were never really a bad team and still aren't a bad team. Offensively, we had a lot of trouble scoring, and we had a lot of trouble
mm-hmm.
scoring outside. And Josh Smith just swore on everything that he was the man to take an outside
yeah.
shot when he know his big behind should have just stayed either on the bench or in the paint. You know what I mean? But you know, with all of that said, though, I think once we get, you know, our point guard situation straight, once Brandon Jennings gets back healthy, once, you know, Stan Van Gundy's had a full year, Spencer Dinwiddie, we picked him up in the draft last year. He's going to do fine. Caldwell Pope, he's going to develop. I think the Pistons
will be
all right. Great show, fellas. Thank you so much for giving me some time.
Don't leave yet. Go ahead and plug in your show.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Awesome. Well, we host the I host Just Hanging Out with T and Jers on Tuesday nights from 8 to 9:30. We kick it about everything, basketball, football, whatever's hot, we get it in. So, you know, if you guys out there are listening, Tuesday nights, right here, same place, Blog Talk, we rep for the sports fam and get it in, 8 to 9:30 Eastern time. That's how we do.
All right. Thank you.
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you for that call. Hey, I didn't even know that Detroit drafted Chris Middleton.
Yeah.
And then traded him.
That was stupid. But you know what? I do wonder. T brought up something that was interesting to me. What? I didn't even understand the Reggie Jackson trade. But I'm not trying to question Stan Van Gundy at this point. What are we going to do in the offseason?
That didn't make any sense to me.
And he doesn't. To me, he doesn't fit the team.
But to me,
that's how I felt.
To me, it made me feel like, well, first of all, I always felt like when they got Jennings, it was a bit of a press move because they were just trying to get this talent in there.
Right.
Reggie Jackson, I just don't see what they saw in him.
He can play.
He can play.
But he's not a pick and roll, pick and pop type guy. He's an open court type dude. He's like rough. He's like a very poor. When I say poor, I'm talking about like on the street asking for coins. Poor version of Russell Westbrook.
Exactly.
So I was getting ready to say, like, what is his place? This I'm gonna be honest with you about Reggie Jackson. This is my personal feeling. I've been watching basketball for a very long time. I think he has a lot of talent. I think he is a combo guard off the bench. I do not think he's a starting point guard in this NBA.
And he ugly as the dirty part of your foot.
I did not say that.
It just seemed like even when he was with OKC, it just seemed like he was just one of them guys, like you just let him loose.
And that's what you do with Russell Westbrook.
Right.
That's why I say he's a very poor version of Russell Westbrook to me.
So it's kind of like when it got to the point where both of them was in the backcourt, it was kind of like, all right, this not going to work.
Right.
This not going to work.
That's why DJ Augustine was a phenomenal pickup for OKC.
Absolutely agree.
DNA Sports Talk asked us, can Stan Van Gundy get them over the top?
I think so. I think he can.
I think that Detroit has a lot – I don't want to say a lot of salary cap issues. I think they have a lot of personnel issues on the court, and I think that he will figure it out, but he needs time. Now, Van Gundy, this signing of him being in Detroit, him being a Detroit head coach, GM, and all that stuff, this is a make or break moment for him. Because all the chips are on him. When he was in Orlando, I mean, he publicly got on the air and said, oh, they told me straight from the top, what's calling, want me traded, want me fired, and blah. That leaves a black eye, in my personal opinion, with you as a coach or whatever you want to be with the other teams. Just like Jason Kidd probably can never get another job until maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road. In the NBA.
Right.
So Stan Van Gundy is very lucky to get what he got. But I think you had two people. You had Detroit that was very desperate for a culture change. And I think you had Stan Van Gundy who was desperate to prove that he is an elite coach. So I think it's a great match. But I think he needs at least, not this year, he's going to lose Monroe. I would give him, what's this, 15? I think in 2017, Detroit will be contending.
2017?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. I agree with that.
Well, let me go ahead and talk about this right quick. We got to plug this in. These people, they keep talking about Atlanta sports.
You people.
You people?
Why?
What you mean, you people?
I'm trying to figure out where all this come from. Where does it stem from? I haven't got a logic answer yet. Why do people feel like they have to constantly... Okay. Okay, let me ask y'all, why do y'all think people act like this towards Atlanta?
Well, I think, in my opinion, the reason why you get a lot of people that that hate on Atlanta is because of the perception of the Atlanta fan. We seem like we came out of the blue. Like we just started cheering for the Hawks, or like we just started cheering for the Falcons and the Braves, any team we've ever had. And mainstream media, that perception out there because we haven't had that polarizing figure or that dominant figure to where we're always on TV. I mean, you think about it. The Hawks, before we can even get to be the lead story in the ESPN feed, I mean, we had to win almost 19 games in a row. When, once we hit like 14, 15, they started saying, oh, the Hawks beat the 76ers, you know. But it's just the perception of us as fans. That's why I think that.
I can tell you one thing about the media. They didn't hesitate to throw it out there when the Hawks went lost three in a row.
Right. The sky was falling.
Right.
I mean, you can even – I remember watching a game a couple years ago. It was like Atlanta versus Boston. This is when Garnett and all those guys were still there. And I think we won that game. I think Josh Smith had a game-winning putback. But I remember watching that game on ESPN and just hearing how bad they were dogging us out.
Yeah.
The announcers.
Right.
You know, so I thought it was weird that the announcers were going in on us.
The announcers did it recently, though. What game that was?
The Atlanta versus Golden State game, which it was not Atlanta's best game.
Right.
But it was it was so biased.
Right.
It was almost hysterical and laughable. But, you know, I've always said I don't have a problem with people hating Atlanta because you used to be an Atlanta fan and they disappointed you so much that you just done with them. I understand that. You have to have a reason. My problem is the people who are fans of other teams who have no relation to Atlanta. Why are you mad that I root for Atlanta?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't get that. Like people who may be from Memphis or something.
Right.
You know, you're from Memphis. Like we ain't in the same divisions nowhere. Do you hate Georgia football and Tennessee? Like, what is it? You don't have a reason. You don't have a reason, but yeah, it's always this hate. But you always have to accept the fact that a lot of people are. You have to look at their teachers and their what their history teaches them. And one of the biggest teachers is media, and media has never liked Atlanta. I don't know why. They just don't. It's never been sellable. I don't think.
I don't think we've ever gave them anything to cheer for. Mainstream media.
Except Mike Vick. Media love Mike Vick, but then they hated Mike.
Yeah.
But they love Mike. They love Mike Vick.
But he was that guy. He had that it factor. He's the only guy. Even Deion didn't have that it factor. Like he had an it factor. But what I'm saying is, it was not to the magnitude of Michael Vick.
Yeah, Michael Vick.
Vick was must see TV. Anytime you rival Peyton Manning as far as being the face of football, you must see TV.
Yeah. That's what it was at the time. Sure was. Them too.
So, yeah, that was the only time when I used to watch and you would see this praise for Atlanta. And, you know, even when Mike Vick had a bad game, it was like, yo, just give him time. He's still figuring it out. You know, and that was very enjoyable. But we haven't experienced that since, you know. Woo.
What happened to Astro?
Who?
Astro. You know who Astro is?
No.
The dog.
Oh, shoot.
George! Him.
Oh, wow.
Right, George.
I don't know.
I love Mike Vick, though. I'm just joking.
Even though you look at Atlanta now, all I hear is Atlanta won't win because they don't have a superstar. And to me, that screams media.
Yeah.
And no legit reason.
And let's go back to what T was saying. Detroit didn't have a superstar in 2004.
Right. Had a bunch of people that played together.
Just played together, yeah.
I love that team.
Great team.
Ben Wallace.
I love that team.
Ben Wallace, Rasheed, Tayshaun, Chauncey.
Rip.
That was amazing.
A couple guys off the bench.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you look at Atlanta, for example, Atlanta Hawks, I'm sorry, I don't see – it would be an utter shocking disappointment if we lost in the first round. I just don't see it happening. But to some people, Atlanta Hawks are – they may not do it because we have a history, quote unquote, of not winning in the playoffs, which I disagree with. But, you know, to me, that screams media bias.
I think if Atlanta win anything, it's still going to be a problem. I think they still going to – it's just going to get worse. I really think.
No, it's going to get worse. I mean, you have to celebrate winners.
You have to celebrate winners, but when they fail, when it's all over, I think it's going to get worse.
I disagree.
I disagree with that.
Yeah, because when you win, it changes everything.
I'm talking about when – if we win one this year,
mm-hmm.
whatever team it is,
a chip.
If that next year – they looking like hot garbage, whatever the case is. It's going to be worse.
I
truly
so.
Believe that.
I don't think so.
I think they'll be fine. I mean, a championship, look, okay, the Detroit Pistons, and I'm sure T would even agree with this, they won, but they won that championship in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But for how many years they didn't look like a championship team, but people were still saying, oh, yeah, they may make it. They may make it. I mean, it went on for like 6 or 7 years.
But they still, the cities like Detroit, they're going to hold that legacy. They're going to hold that legacy, which Detroit already done, even went back when Isaiah and all them. That's like the Lakers. They're going to hold them legacies like that.
But Lakers are different.
What I'm saying, just period, though. In Detroit, I can see them just holding that legacy, period. As soon as 04 hit, when Rasheed Wallace hit that team, the first thing they said was, Detroit are the bad boys again. He ain't even played not one game yet. They going to hold that
crazy.
Legacy.
You're welcome, Detroit.
No, I'm just saying. It was, yeah, exactly.
You're welcome.
Rasheed knew what he was doing. He had to do his thing in Atlanta so he could still look good, and then, you know, whatever. Anyway. But I'm just saying, they're going to hold that legacy in Detroit. They are.
I got you.
I think any winning organization will hold that legacy. Because I'm going to tell you, okay, let me give you a great example. The Atlanta Braves.
Yes.
We were not good some of those years in the 90s. We may have won the division, but the division was weak. Guess what? It's still weak. That's another subject, though. But we kept winning, and we was barely winning the division, didn't really have great teams. Because, like I said, the win that division was very easy, but when you put us in the playoffs, that's why we always fight. Because
right,
the team
out.
Wasn't
right.
good.
Right.
But we still, people were like, oh, yeah, Braves still going to win. Braves still going to win. It wasn't until Bobby Cox pretty much said he was retiring and people started saying, oh, the Braves kind of suck.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you the Falcons or you the Hawks, that's what I'm saying. I just don't see it.
But see, here's the thing. Okay, let's take two examples. Talk about the Saints. I'm not going to disrespect y'all today. Not today. The New Orleans Saints were horrible for years. Even when they got better, they were horrible in everybody's mind. Until they won that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They won that Super Bowl, and now all of a sudden, even till now, they are still up to win the NFC South. How? I don't know. But even last year, like, it was a long shot.
Drew Brees can't play more than one position.
Yeah, even last year, it was a long shot. But they still get that benefit of a doubt. Atlanta, especially the Hawks, have to win so that you can get that notoriety. You win now, and all of a sudden they back up off you. Now the media loves you.
I think the pressure's fair. I think the idiotic, random hate is unfair. But that's when you're dealing with casual fans anyway. You know, like a great example is. On social media, one guy was like, oh, y'all going to lose in the first round, you guys, because y'all suck. And it's like, I think I said something back like, what is your logical explanation? And this person, he cheers for the Memphis Grizzlies. He's one of the actors I worked with him in another project. He cheers for the Grizzlies. And I asked him, I said, for example, I don't think that the Grizzlies are going to win a championship because Zach Randolph is very limited. If you push him right. And Conley, I have not seen him been tested as far as if somebody being physical with him. And your best player is Mark Gasol. One guy cannot beat 10, 12 guys, okay? So that was my logical explanation. Now, whether you agree with it or not, that's one thing. But, it wasn't like I was saying, oh, well, what makes Memphis so special? The only thing you have is Justin Timberlake. So if I would have said that would have been stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They do got ribs, too.
Yeah.
MLK got shot up there, so good
yeah.
and bad, good
yeah.
and bad.
Y'all still got the Lorraine. It just doesn't make sense for me to get that level of hate especially for Atlanta. Like, for Atlanta, they're on a skid now. People are starting to question, you know, are we starting to get worried? It's a valid question. However, my team is still well over 50 wins.
Right.
The Atlanta Hawks are still first place and will win the first place unless it is an utter collapse. I'm not worried. But to other people, it just, here's Atlanta doing Atlanta stuff again.
People look for it.
The bad part, I'm going to tell you, I thought Atlanta was starting to shed that until that one year. Marley, you're going to have to help me. The Atlanta Braves, they hit that utter collapse, like over the last month and a half.
When, San Francisco came in? No, St. Louis came and beat us out for that wild card position.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
With the flute pop. Rule fly, whatever that was. That was when it was like, oh, see, they go Atlanta again.
Yeah.
And then we start to get that. But we just have to win. We just have to win. But DNA Sports Talk on Twitter, again, follow them at DNA Sports Talk. They said what I have always said. It's minority money in Atlanta. And people will forever dislike Atlanta for that.
Minority money.
It's black money. Black money has always been in Atlanta. And you're always gonna get the burn end of the stick.
I don't want to put race out there like that. I'm not saying I disagree, but I don't think it's always about race.
It's not always.
Because I'm gonna give you a good example. Sacramento is predominantly a black city, and Sacramento was selling out big time. I just think you know you have to win consistently, show that your win will sustain the test of time, and I think people will get off your back.
Yeah.
And I think that Atlanta is on the ups. The Atlanta Hawks are on the upswing from that. But yeah, if they win a championship, all bets are off. I think everybody would agree with that. But if you put together this season, this 50 plus wins, come back next year, then you're gonna start hearing people say, "Man, Atlanta's a pretty good team, but y'all still ain't won no championship." And that would be fair.
I mean, I'm not speaking from that. So I'm speaking from a media standpoint. Why you won't get the best of the coverage.
Okay.
A lot of that has to do, it affects, I'm not saying it's all about race, but race affects how that coverage happens.
Okay.
Think about it, for example, really quick. When you say gay city, everybody says Atlanta. When San Francisco been the hood for years.
I was thinking San Francisco.
We from here, though. I agree with that. For some reason, everybody say Atlanta first, and then they say San Francisco. Me, I think San Francisco. But
San Francisco, the hub. I mean, man, it's been the hub for years.
Never
but
been.
I feel like you get a lot of that. Yeah.
I mean, I want to try to be smart. I just never been to San Francisco.
I mean, fam.
I didn't see it.
I just feel like there's a lot of unbiasedness that happens within the media. And you have to realize people are taught from the media. So if you get hate from guys like Heath Evans, or whatever his name is, irrelevant fullback. You know, fullback talking junk. Anyway, when you get people like that talking and then Warren Sapp, oh, I'm sorry, he's not there anymore. Got to pay him in private. But when you get them on TV and they talk about Atlanta the way they do, it just teaches the people who are not that deep into the game that Atlanta's no good. And that keeps rolling over to everybody.
But see, it gets deeper than that to the point where they're not just dogging out the team. Now they're saying bandwagon jumpers and all this, that, third. So like, it's deeper than them just saying this team sucks.
Yeah.
When the team winning, it's, oh, all y'all bandwagon jumpers. Y'all just jumping on the bandwagon. And almost everybody I know, I can sit here and we don't have enough time. I can go down a list of people that was always fans, especially the host, that was diehard.
But see, here's my point. This is why I say it's biased. Atlanta is considered bandwagon, right? We're bandwagon jumpers, blah, 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 blah. I even got called a bandwagon jumper. I'm like, you just don't know me. That's hysterical. I was rooting for Jeff George back in the day. Chris
oh,
Miller.
My God, yes.
Chris Miller. Don't talk to me about bandwagon. Right. Anyway, for us, we're bandwagon. But you go to Golden State, ain't none of them bandwagon?
Boy.
None of them? Even when Steph Curry had no ankles? Everybody was shook.
And that's why he didn't get a max contract.
Yes, but everybody was shook in Golden State.
But see, this is what I've told you guys before, and I know you guys, I think you guys didn't agree with me. The term bandwagon, to me, I think it needs to be dug into because it has to be a beginning to it all. It has to be an origin to it all for someone. Like, if someone said, hey, I like watching Steph Curry play, and he's a great basketball player, so now I like the Golden State Warriors, I can't consider them a bandwagon jumper because they're saying this is why I'm watching them. This kid is great.
Yeah.
You know, but just now, if you want to say someone who's like, oh, man, you know, I remember when Tim Hardaway was doing his thing and Chris Mullin was doing his, and then we've been doing it up ever since, and now Steph Curry's here. Now I can see that. But for most fans, I think it's just trash talk because I think most fans, if you really sit down and have a casual conversation with them, they'll tell you, like, for me, for example, I've been cheering for the Atlanta Hawks ever since I was, probably before I was wearing diapers. I don't know. I was in my dad's sack cheering for the Atlanta Hawks. Okay? So, you know, it just, I'm not a bandwagon jumper. You know, but, like, people, like, look at me sideways when I say I cheer for the Falcons and the Ravens. Like, what? Why? How you do that? You can't do that. You have to have one team.
I was just going to go there.
Well, the reason why I cheer for them is because when I was growing up, see, I have an origin, my beginning.
Yeah,
I grew up loving the Miami Hurricanes because they were introduced to me by one of my older cousins. And the Miami Hurricanes, with Baltimore, they just loved the Miami Hurricanes and the Florida State Seminoles. They drafted a lot of those guys, so I wanted to keep watching Ray Lewis and watching Dwayne Starks and Peter Ballware. He went to Florida State. I like those guys, so that made me navigate to the Browns/Ravens, you know?
But see, but to me, that doesn't make you a bandwagon jumper when people say you can't cheer for two of the same teams. To me, that's crazy. Like, that whole definition is just out of control, period, as far as what a bandwagon jumper is. It's just out of control.
We have to figure out what a bandwagon jumper is. And like Walter said, a lot of it has to do with the story, the background. Like, even when I receive hate, when you say you hate on my team, I just want to know why. A lot of times I'll be like, why you hate on them? I'm a Saints fan. All right, I understand.
Yeah, I give you that.
Move along. All right, I'm a San Francisco 49er fan. I understand.
Right.
Good
day. That's that old history right there.
Yeah, good day. But it's the people that's like, oh, Atlanta sucks. Like, why? Because y'all do. How you say, because we ain't never won. Okay, well, you go back in the history and I'll tell you exactly why we lost games. Or why, you know, it's not always because you're not clutch. I've seen the Atlanta Hawks get murdered by the likes of a Boston team that was so stacked. I just almost cried as a kid. Because you know that we just can't do nothing.
Right.
And you see Dominique out there working hard. Even people now.
It's kind of sweating.
You ain't lying.
To this day, I'm leaving it at this. To this day, you tell people about Dominique and his legacy in Atlanta, and they say, quickly, he never played no defense. No, the media told you he didn't play no defense.
You ain't lying.
That man was everything for the Atlanta Hawks squad. Y'all just don't understand. I mean, he had some post defense to come in there every once in a while, but perimeter defense was him and himself only.
And I will go back to say this. I've said this time and time again. The Hawks organization has been around since 1960, well, they came to Atlanta in 1968, so they was the St. Louis Hawks before then. So the organization had been around. I think it was one of the original teams. Don't quote me on that. Dominique Wilkins is the all-time steals leader.
Yeah.
The team just been in Atlanta since 1968. You can't do that if you don't play defense.
Right.
And he only played here, what, 10 years, 12 years? Not even that. No, 11 years, because he got drafted in 1983.
Uh-huh.
No, that's 12 years. 83, you traded him away in 93,
94. Yeah. To this guy.
I know we got to do the For the People segment, man, but let's take a few phone calls before we go. We're going to that.
Okay. Well, we're going to go with the last four, 2244. That's 2244. You're now enough for discussion.
What's up? What's going on?
What's going on?
Hello? What's going on?
Yeah, we're good.
Hey, yo, this is Asa. This is Asa, the A and DNA. What's going on with y'all?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Everything good. Show is straight. Appreciate y'all bringing out some real good points. I wanted to jump in on that, the Atlanta hate and why. All
right, speak on it, bro.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Hey, so for the Hawks in particularly, they've done a horrible job over – since Dominique left, since the Hawks had a good team in the 80s, the NBA was coming up. I say over the last 20 years, the Hawks have done a horrible terrible job, piss poor job in marketing. You know, Atlanta being a transient city, you know, granted, I'm not going to get a New Yorker to not be a Knick anymore, or I'm not going to get a, you know, a person from L.A. to not be a Lakers fan anymore. I get that, but they did a horrible job at going at the young one. You know what I mean? So, you know, this year has been an incredible 360. When I go to the games, I got T-shirts. There's something I'm walking away with other than a Chick-fil-A cow. You know what I mean? They haven't packaged, they have to a degree, but not as bad as they did the few years. They haven't packaged all the transient cities teams. So I don't have a package of New York, Cleveland, LA, and Miami, and then expect to somehow have Hawks fans out cheer. You know what I mean? Everybody else that you package, or Boston fans, you know what I mean? So, you know, for a while, the marketing has just been horrible for the Hawks in particular. So they've basically, in order to sell tickets, they created a home away for home for those five or six teams that they put into that package. You know what I mean? So that's some of the reason why you get so much hate, because the people who come to the game aren't really Hawks fans. You know what I mean? They're the other team's fans, that they, you know, put the tickets out there for that. And you see it now with them winning. You don't see tickets being given away on the corner. You know, so you got to pay to come. So if I'm paying to come, I'm really a Hawks fan and I'm coming. I'm not giving tickets away to, you know, like I said, to the Heat or whoever else. So that's part of the problem that you have at Hawks games. About the minority dollar, hey, you know, we don't always want to throw race out there, but it's always right under the line. So, you know, if you're going to promote the Hawks, or the Hawks in particular, because football has its own marketing and its own money. So regardless, you know, if I'm 2-12 or if I'm 12-4, those owners get that money. Same thing almost in baseball. Those owners get that money. NBA, though, these guys, NBA is still kind of looking for that dollar from outside vendors and you know, things of that nature. There's still some revenue stream that the NBA has not figured out that baseball and football has figured out. So when you see ESPN not covering that first Golden State Atlanta game, when you knew both teams or had just finished winning 21 or 23 games, how come ESPN doesn't have that game? It's underlining it's minority money. You know what I mean? It's knowing that if I support the Hawks, I got to also support what's going on in the community. That might sound what the Hawks, you know, what the NBA does so much good when it comes to, like, MLK Day and things of that nature. Yeah, on the front they do, but on the backside, the NBA is still lacking when it comes to, you know, doing a lot of things in that arena. So, you know, the other markets, West Coast markets, New York market, even that Texas market, is a lot of different money that's out there that we have no idea about that gets the NBA's attention, not so much here in Atlanta and in the South.
Appreciate that call, Ace, man. That was absolutely right, man. Before we go, man, tell the people what day and time your show comes on.
Oh, man, we on each and every Monday, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can check us out. Both of the same way. You can they check y'all show out. You can go to our website, dnasportstalk.com, click on the live show, or you can go to smashmouthfm.com and click on the link there, and it plugs you right on in. So every Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., we on getting it in, keeping you up to date what's going on in the sports world, and trying to give a true side of what's going on, the same way y'all doing as far as perspective.
I appreciate that call, man. Hey, man, you can wrap it up, man. I don't think we're ever, and like Asa said, we're never going to really convert people until we win or until there's better marketing.
Well, one thing he said that I totally agreed with was about how the NBA package, you know, the NBA is just like wrestling. Like, it's about the person's face and their personality and stuff like that. And you got 30 teams, you know, just to do, you know, wrestling terminology, every team doesn't have a John Cena, you know.
Right.
And like when you, the Toronto Raptors, I mean, they got a, I don't know, the Brooklyn Brawler. They ain't got nobody I watch that I would want to watch, you know. They winning.
Right.
You know, but they're boring.
Right.
So, yeah, that's true. But we do got to win. I think winning cures racism or whatever you may think is going on. It cures bias, whatever.
Yeah.
Because look at San Antonio.
So true.
Because that market is – that's smaller than Atlanta as far as the market is concerned. Because the big cities in Texas is Houston and Dallas.
Yeah.
So, when they start winning, everybody looking at them like they're the – fourth best dynasty in NBA history?
Hey, bro, if it weren't for the Spurs, they wouldn't even know San Antonio and Texas.
Right.
Right. All right, fellas. Let's go ahead and do For the People by 48 Media.
Calling all independent and unsigned artists, producers, DJs, models, and photographers. Do you want to gain more exposure? Need to build a buzz? Then check out 48 Media and submit to be featured on 48media.com. Send your request to info@48media.com. That's F-O-U-R, the number 8, media.com. You can also find 48 Media on Facebook and Twitter. Just search the number 4, E-I-G-H-T, Media. 48 Media.
That's 48 Media, also brought to you by City Boy South.
You can sing it that time.
CIDDYBOYSOUTH.com.
I got to find out how to get auto-tune.
Hey, it is what it is, man.
Auto-tune.
No, I ain't going to do that. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Sean had a two-part question. Well, actually, he had two questions. First question is, which siblings have been more dominant, the Williams sisters or the Manning brothers?
Oh, that's easy for me. That's Williams sisters. What they did to the sports world is just completely taken over. I mean, you have to remember, too, Venus was hot before Serena was even of age to start. And then Serena came in, and they didn't stop. They just together. And especially when they went into doubles for a long time. I mean, it was almost a given loss. The Manning brothers, we know Peyton has had a little trouble winning Super Bowls, and Eli has had troubles putting together winning seasons. But they're both very top of their game, but not like the Williams sisters were.
I would second that. I think the Manning brothers have left, they left their legacy in football. I think that the Williams sisters changed tennis, and there's a difference.
Mm. Oh, you just saying that because you want to dip your chocolate in Serena peanut butter.
No, I was actually taking my bias out. I was taking my bias out. I mean, if you ever get a chance, go and look on YouTube or something and watch the 30 for 30 that they did on Venus Williams and how she changed the financial purse for these tennis tournaments.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
So.
All right, and the second question he had was, who left a bigger impact on society, and he mean in sports?
See, I didn't get if he was saying between the Mannings or the Williams.
I think it was.
That's easy. For me, it's the Williams.
Right. Yeah,
okay,
for me,
well,
it's the Williams. Especially when you look at who played tennis at the time, it was an afterthought. Like, even when I was, I don't know about you guys, but growing up in East Point, Georgia, small little town, outside of Atlanta, you know, we played any hop or baseball on tennis courts.
Yeah.
You know, when Williams sisters got big, you saw kids buying, black kids buying tennis rackets.
Right. Hey, don't get me wrong. I knew who Malvia Washington was. He was a pretty good tennis player in his own right, brother. But I didn't have that much of an interest in picking up a racket until I saw the Williams sisters.
Arthur Ashe didn't motivate you to do it?
Hey, even before my time.
Yeah.
There's no disrespect to him.
Yeah.
I mean, I know his history, but
yeah. I mean, I'm in agreement. He had a bigger impact.
All right, Nate Cook had a question. He said,
Nate,
what team in sports history has won more championships than the New York Yankees? Y'all want me to answer that? Or
you can
I mean, okay. Well, I actually did some research because
nobody.
No? Well, I mean, wait, if you're talking about sports, period, it is one.
Who?
With the Real Madrid.
Some kind of soccer. Yeah, okay.
Oh.
They got 32.
Okay.
So I had to research that one because Chad Brokhoff, he actually threw it out there saying he think it is the Real Madrid. He's not sure. I just started researching. I believe it's them. And then it's them, the Yankees, and I can't think of who was the other team.
So the Yankees had 27 or 28?
27.
Okay.
They had 27. The Real Madrid had 32. And I can't think of the other team behind it. I think they had.
The Lakers?
No, it's not even a basketball team. It's not a basketball team.
It has to be soccer.
I think it's soccer, and I think they had 26 or 27. They might be tired when I sit here and think
about it. Real Madrid, and it has to be the other one, Chelsea.
I think that's it. I think that's the one. But, yeah, it's the Real Madrid.
There's nobody in Atlanta.
Okay, and Chad Brokhoff had one himself. He said, would you allow your athletes to have Twitter or other social media accounts if you were a college coach or anyway, just answer the question.
athletic director.
I got called up. I apologize.
Athletic.
My quick answer is yes, absolutely. Because as a coach, you don't want to make it seem like you're so stingent to where it affects your recruiting. And an athletic director, you want that sport to continue to make money, and your players need to be accessible. So, yeah.
For me, I wouldn't stop them, but what I would do is give them a Derek Jeter lesson. There's a reason why Derek Jeter's not on Facebook, on Twitter, and personally, you know, I say this all the time, as I climb the public figure ranks, I won't even be on there. I need it right now. No offense. I mean, I keep giving, you know, keep helping for home field advantage and everything. But I'm saying, because it diminishes your aura. If you think about if Michael Jordan had Twitter and Facebook when he was playing, nobody would like him as much as they do.
No, they wouldn't.
Because you'd be like, man, he beat the hell out of Steve Kerr. Why?
Yeah.
He's fighting Wilbur, dude. Why? He's arguing with Scotty. That's his guy. He's selfish. He needs Scotty. You know, you would hear all that, but you don't hear that now because none of this is on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. It'd be a picture of Jordan, Steve Kerr.
It'd be a punching him in the face. Yeah. It's all right. It's all right. I wouldn't stop him, though. Like, if you want it, you got it. But once you get to a certain level of, well, you're just doing stupid stuff, yeah, I'm going to stop it.
I wonder, did this question stem from Tom Izzo? When he told his players to take their cell phone and pretty much shove it where the sun don't shine. Did y'all hear about that?
I want you to take that cell phone, turn it sideways.
That's pretty much what he told them during this tournament. That was just his way of saying you need to stay focused.
I love Tom Izzo, and I'm sorry, Tom, for even – this is the first year I ever doubted you, and I apologize.
I usually doubt him, but this year –
never doubt him.
This year, I mean, as far as like how Michigan State has been in tournaments, but I seen this team this year, and I was like, they're going to be a problem. I said, they are going to be a problem. But that wraps up For the People, brought to you by 48 Media. Now, let's get started with final four thoughts. Who would like to go first?
Pause for dramatic effect.
I can go first if I want to. I can go ahead and go first.
Okay,
so I just remember growing up, and I was filling out job applications, and I was wondering why I never could get a job. And my dad was like, well, you know, these days you have to put your email address. I'm like, yeah, I put my email address. And he said, so what's your email address? And I put my email address, was actually my rap name at the time, which was Black South One. And my dad said, I wouldn't hire you either. So this is basically what I'm trying to tell people, because I just experienced something the other day. It was a young lady I was trying to handle business with as far as on the business level, and her email account was Relax, Relate, Release, Patrice.
Oh, wow.
She was watching Cosby Show?
Different world. Right. And I actually told her, like, just put your name and put at gmail.com because it's going to hinder you. Basically, what I'm saying is, people, please take care of business how it's supposed to be taken care of.
I just have a quick thing to say, and I was trying to make sure I said this as appropriately as possible. Sometimes you're too smart for your own good. What I mean by that is, when you put yourself in a bubble and you're the only person in the bubble, you're the smartest person in the bubble, but you're still in the bubble. That means
goodbye.
Don't always think that you're smarter than everybody else when you're in your own world. How about you go to a different world?
Release.
Bubble boy.
I don't really have too much to say. I just wanted to say thank you to all the people that support, you know, the projects that I work on, and thank you for all the new relationships I have made over this past year. I'm really thankful for everything. I'm thankful for everyone supporting For Home Field Advantage. And that's basically it, man. And one quick thing, just remember, your net worth is your network, and that's why I don't, you know, treat people bad or turn my back on people, because, you know, we all need each other, and we all trying to, when you meet people along this journey, we all need each other, and we all trying to reach a common goal, and you never know when you need to scratch somebody else's back, and they may need to scratch yours.
See, Amber Rose, we need you to network with us for business purposes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. You can check us out on Facebook on our For Home Field Advantage Trash Talk, our For Home Field Advantage Sports Talk. Check us out on Twitter, the number 4HF Advantage. We're here every Wednesday. Up for discussion starts at 7 o'clock. I'd like to thank Sports Fam. I'd like to thank DNA Sports. I'd like to thank Mike B for calling in. He is part of the Survivor Radio Network. We're going to talk to y'all next week for another great show.
Olive.